Here we go. So, hey everyone, happy Friday. Thanks for tuning in. This is the second episode of the Zcash podcast. I'm very happy to have the one and only Aditya Bharadwaj here for me to talk about a lot of fun stuff. How's it going, man?
Pretty good, you know. It's a Friday, so just winding down the week.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a great way to cap off the week. Kind of, there's two types of Fridays, it tends to be. It's either the Friday where you're like, you know, you sort of, after lunch, you start thinking about the weekend, and so the work still goes on, but it's kind of slower, and then you just sort of cap it off with a nice, this goes into the weekend. Or it's one of those Fridays where you're just like tearing your hair out because everything you should have done the rest of the week now still has to be done. You're like, oh no. So I'm assuming the first type of person will be listening today, and the second type will not be listening today because they have...
They can catch up later on.
Yes, they can catch up later on. This will be recorded. Obviously, this is being recorded. And I usually put it out and share it on Sunday specifically. But if you just... The links are still everywhere. You can watch it anytime. I should remind everyone... So first of all, this podcast is funded by Zcash itself, right? By the Zcash community grants. And so... As such, I don't put any ads on any of these videos ever. I don't really get much revenue from ads anyway, but I've done these ones. I just keep it off, you know, because, you know, already paid for. And I should point out also that the little intro graphic and the spinny logo and all that stuff, I paid the designer in Zcash for that, of course. So, nice. You know, just kind of keeping it true to the whole thing. Obviously, leave comments and stuff in the live chat. If you are one of my subscribers in my Discord, there is a Zcash podcast super chat channel. So if you have one of my NFTs, you're automatically in the Discord and you can go over there and chat. Those are always going to be giving precedence. But since, you know, this is not purely self-monetized, I will also read any comments from anything. Usually I make them kind of like beg for it, but not this time. So... we have a bunch of fun stuff to talk about. Why don't we just start with an intro? Who is this guy who I'm talking with right now? why don't you tell us who you are, what do you do, and your relation to Zcash?
Sure. So I'm Aditya. I've been a software developer and a mobile app designer ever since the first Android and iOS SDKs were made public. And around the same time, Bitcoin was released, 2009, 2010. So I first heard about it in 2010, 2011 timeframe. Lucky to be around the New England area. That's where we had a lot of those early meetups. Mm-hmm. I also had the first ever podcast, I believe. It was called Let's Talk Bitcoin with Adam B. Levine, Stephanie Murphy, and Andreas Antonopoulos. So I have been following this space for a while. Myself and my consulting company, Nighthawk Apps, we also built some tipping widgets early in the day. When only three cryptocurrencies existed, Bitcoin, Namecoin, and Litecoin. And then we
remember
had
those days.
Dogecoin launch was amazing because that gave a lot of people an opportunity to be one of the day one miners. So I've always been in touch at near the user base of what kind of apps they would need, what widgets and web software they could integrate to accept cryptocurrencies. So that's how I got started following the cryptocurrency space. But of course, it's been a very long journey in the last 10 years. But recently, I've been involved in Zcash. Got focused on it since 2018, 2019 timeframe, just about when the you could start using shielded transactions on mobile wallets. So I remember there was a application called Garda shielded wallet, which was Zcash only. Wallet for about when shielded transactions you could start, and then the alternative was Zec Wallet's companion app, so you could connect to your own full node running at your home from a client app on your Android device. So that was a very fun time. I really, as a mobile developer, wanted to use the shielded transactions, full node running at your home from a client app on your Android device.
That's a whole different story coming from transparent to shielded money.
I was super excited to see these updates, and that's when I started truly getting deeper into the Zcash ecosystem. And right when the ECC released mobile SDKs, which made it easier to access the underlying cryptography of Zcash, I thought it was the right time to start building a end-user focused application, which will make it easy for anyone to use Zcash instead of being introduced to a mobile wallet, which is like too functional, which can go only about accounts or transactions. That could be a bit confusing for completely new users who want to play with cryptocurrencies. And yeah, since the last 3 years, I've been focused on building Nighthawk wallet. And we also expanded into building a block explorer because we saw there was not accurate explorers out there. And also running the public infrastructure for Zcash Lite clients, the Lite Quality service. So that's been my involvement. I'm also a cross community collaborator. I try to find chains with which Zcash could work with and integrate with. So some of them are the Flexa spending chain for collateral. There's the Thorchain integration, maybe even using the NIM network for network level privacy. So we could talk about this in detail.
Yeah, it's so I guess I know you most from the Zcash Community Grants Committee, and that's something that's it's one of those things with those I guess innovations in crypto that was not really in the early days. And from I guess my history perspective in this, obviously there's Bitcoin and the Bitcoin many forks and projects that are similar to that in the very early days where it was just mined from the beginning, and it's hard to pay the bills, right? It's hard to keep things moving through that model. So a lot of people were scared to not do that model, but they found ways around it. Like they announced the project after the founders already got to mine a little bit of extra stuff, or they did an explicit pre-mine of some kind, or they did little weird things to try to get some money, and then you know, it just didn't end up being sustainable for almost everything except for Bitcoin. And then at some point in there, we had the Ethereum ICO model kind of thing, where the VC model, where you have a lot of VC funded coins, a lot of ones that get a lot of investment that then kind of last. And that seems to be kind of the modern model, where a whole lot of these projects get a lot of upfront investment that then just carries a development team and you know everyone else moving forward. And in between all of those two things, there's been kind of like the self-funding model where, for example, you have something like Dash is the one I'm more familiar with, coming out with a DAO in like 2015 that just self-funds. And then Zcash had the Founders Reward, which again was a subject of, I would say, undue controversy over the years. But really providing, you know, kind of a lifeline to actually be able to build something and continue to innovate, you know, kind of over time to actually be able to fund an entire ecosystem. And then kind of the cool thing about having that self-funding model is, as when I was speaking with Nathan Wilcox last month about this, or, you know, aired last month, I think it was recorded a little bit before then, that Zcash today, the actual Zcash today is very different from Zcash when it launched, as far as there's been a lot of improvements, a lot of continual developments, a lot of things like that. Whereas like a lot of other chains are just like, they come out strong and then, you know, there are a few tweaks along the way, but they don't have that sustained development that the fund is. And then at some point, also we went over about the transition from a pure founder's reward kind of thing to a few different grant committees. So do you want to kind of go over what the Zcash Community Grants is and kind of how it operates and things like that?
Sure. Oh, but before that, I would like to just recap on how you covered all the different funding models that have been used. I mean, Zcash original Founders Reward isn't that controversial, right? Because you have seen so many successful top 10 cryptocurrency projects today, all taking a similar stance, which is you raise money from a small group of investors and then somehow maybe lock their coins over a period of months or years and then release it to them, right? Mm-hmm. So there's Avalanche, Solana, which does. Even Cardano did that sort of investment where they raised money from investors from Japan only because they didn't want to focus on the US. Mm. So in that way, Zcash did it pretty like legitimately, I would say. Everything was transparent. All the block rewards were dispersed on chain exactly for the 4-year period. And the early investors, they got back what they were promised. And the funding they provided for the early Zcash developers, they were able to build the core network and, you know, bootstrap it and get it on so many exchanges. Even that is a very tough thing to do for a lot of privacy coins. So I think that was itself a huge achievement. And as the first 4 years winded down, the decision had to be made, like, hey, how do we carry on funding these developers? Because they need to have some kind of funding model which will reduce conflict of interest, like from third-party businesses. Like we have seen this in some other cryptocurrencies, and some people argue even Bitcoin is somewhat affected, and the BTC is affected with that issue. And that is some prominent businesses in the space, they hire the co-developers who control the emergency keys of the client and maybe restrict the client or get only some changes allowed, which benefits the company. So we don't have that issue in Zcash, right? The block reward provides funding directly to the developers. There is no interaction with a third party business or entity telling you what to do and how to do things. So I think that itself is a huge benefit. So there was a decision made by the community with a voting system. There were, like, I think 13 different proposals of how to set up this block reward. Everything was around 20% of the block reward. It was just how you give away this 20% and to which organizations. So primarily there was the ECC, the Electric Coin Company, which has the co-developers building the Zcash T. Then there is the Zcash Foundation entity, a nonprofit, which goal is to advance cryptography and secure a strong foundation for Zcash in the long term. And then there was an idea of, hey, we need to also attract new teams to join Zcash, to decentralize the development and to even help the development, because you can have a skill complementary to the core devs that are present in certain teams. So the biggest chunk of 8% was decided to give to the ZCG, which is the Zcash Community Grants, known as now, earlier known as the Major Grants Program. 7% to the ECC, Zcash D Core Devs, and 5% to Zcash Foundation, which also builds the ZebraD client implementation. So this proposal was one of the 13, and this is the one that finally succeeded through all the voting that went on, conducted by Zcash Foundation. And the people who voted were on the group called the Zcash Community Advisory Panel, ZCAP. So you can be a member of ZCAP if you are an active member in the Zcash ecosystem. You could be active in the forums or development. You should have contributed something like a GitHub pull request that is merged into the top repositories. Or you could just nominate some other person who is very much knowledgeable in the cryptography space. So we have even Vitalik Buterin, part of the Zcap, among many other prominent crypto ecosystem personalities. So once we had this program set up, it was just in 2021, well, the first year. So it's pretty new. We are just in the third year of this self-funding for the community, right? So 5 members were elected as per the ZIP 1014. Maybe you could pull up that link of the ZIP 1014, which kind of tells in detail like how and who will conduct the election, 5 members are elected, and how they will vote, and what criteria they should have. So this proposal was put up quite in an academic mindset. It did not take into account a lot of different, I wouldn't say use cases, but needs of the Zcash community and its investor base and holders. So it caused a lot of discrepancy during, especially the first year, because on one side they wanted to wait and collect enough ZEC, because they're really starting from zero, right? So every block gives 3.125 ZEC since the first halving, and that's equal to 0.25 ZEC, 8% of 3.125. 0.25 ZEC per block goes to the ZCG budget. And so the first committee had to wait in a way to gather some amount of ZEC and they start dispersing it. So I think it was great how they got started. They funded what was much needed, fund the mobile wallet teams. ZEC wallet was funded, even Nighthawk wallet, my team was funded as well. And over the year, there were some issues that came up that actually prompted me to run for the second year. for ZCG. One of the things I realized, again, this is my personal opinion, is that first five committee members who were elected, I didn't find them to be super actively involved in the Zcash community in a way that they are not day-to-day users or not active in the forums or in the Twitter or other community space, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they are active somewhere else, maybe it was not public. And that caused certain delays and miscommunications. And I mean, we didn't really have a structure for the program at first, which is who can apply, when can they apply, how much time it takes to review it. And then all the discussions were happening in public. I mean, there's expectation of transparency when you're dealing with the level of block rewards given to certain people. But again, you have to realize all this money that is given out, it comes with milestones. So as long as the teams are moving along and meeting certain milestones, and then the money is released to those teams raising for money. And the Zcash Foundation is the one which controls, provides safety and manages the custody of all this ZEC. And they also do the KYC for the grant applicants. And I guess that is a necessity when you're taking a custody of multi-million dollars of money, operating as a registered nonprofit. Those were the, some people believe were limitations. Some people would say that is a protections for securing the large fund without, you know, screwing up.
Well, let's actually talk about that specific aspect of it, because it's something that also doesn't get a lot of attention outside of the community, but inside, it's kind of a unique feature where I wouldn't say unique feature, but it ends up being more like company like in that you submit an application, you have to make sure that you comply with certain laws and that. One thing I've noticed though is so the block reward is protocol level and that doesn't discriminate, but then the recipients of that, then it becomes, I would say, a community trusted element to it, to where, you elect people to the board, there's different people that decide things. And what do you think are some of the trade-offs on either side of it? So for example, obviously when you have a straight up block reward just goes to whoever, like a pure DAO kind of a format, where if someone gets funded by the DAO, the money just goes to whatever address gets decided on. They just get it. There's no, it could be the same person who's applying for all these other, they could be lying, they could be whatever. It just doesn't matter. It just goes straight out there. And I mean, obviously from an ease of participation and a lack of risk for, I guess, centralized capture, it might be attractive. But what are some of the attractive elements of having an actual foundation and custodians sort of take charge of that and put in some extra safeguards, et cetera?
Right. So one of the safeguards I could think of is around the premise of PR, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes if an anonymous DAO is funding something, sometimes even the members of the DAO are anonymous. So in order for a short time or a short term bump in the price, they might decide to take some actions which might benefit the coin in the short run, but in the long term, it might be detrimental, or it could attract too many eyes on the coin. Because in one way, the regulatory landscape also matters, right? With so much going on, especially the last year, and the SEC going after entities, regulatory clarity should be provided by someone who is able to fund those people to go and talk to SEC, right? An anonymous DAO cannot do that. And again, here we are trying to clarify that privacy actually benefits end users. It reduces hacks, forgeries, and scams. Whereas the mainstream narrative believes, even there was an article recently in New York Times attacking Signal.
I think I saw that one.
Yeah, so you have to fight that in a very careful way, especially when you're building out the early foundation of the cryptocurrency. Like, I believe Zcash is still being built. It's not, there yet. I mean, we have the trustless setup and Halo 2 live in the blockchain, but there's still a bunch of development that needs to be delivered till we can have fast transactions for anyone anywhere in the world and for anyone to integrate Zcash in their apps, like single can integrate Zcash, mm-hmm. etc. So the level of professionalism benefits. And second point I want to bring up is, I mean, the assumption is here that maybe centralized management is bad, mm-hmm. but nothing has gone bad yet. We are in the third year of ZCG. Every grant has been like taken care of, and the funds have been dispersed by the Zcash Foundation. Instead, mm-hmm. they have given extra management, like behind the scene, help with any legal issues to some grant applicants. They have allowed them to update their milestones. There's a back-end work going on, right? So the ZCG committee of 5 members, again, they are not full-time.
Mm-hmm.
They have, their role is only to approve grants, like evaluate grants and approve it, and maybe come up with more like a request for proposals and new ideas. But as it is set right now in ZIP 1014, there is not much expected from the committee. Maybe the ZIP 1014 can be updated to have some full-time folks, and maybe then we could consider a DAO-based approach. But right now, that is not the case. So the idea of the committee is these guys just review the grants, check the community sentiment, verify that the deliverables will have a net positive net impact on the Zcash ecosystem, and then approve it. And then from there onwards, the Zcash Foundation takes care of a lot of backend management, the portal management, where actually the grant lives, where it is updated. So I think there's a bunch of professionalism here. And I think DAOs are very early to consider right now, right? Just in the last 1 or 2 years, they have really come into active usage by various communities. And I personally do not trust it, especially the technology itself is unreliable. People lose their keys. Some DAO members maybe can just leave the community. Some NFT projects have totally died that way. And if you're going to lock up the community funds in such a DAO, it's a huge risk. So again, considering Zcash still doesn't have like a proper shielded multi-signature way of doing things, we do have the Frost development that's coming along,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have it ready-made and easy to use yet. So maybe once we have it in the future, once we update the ZIPs, once we have confidence in certain entities in the Zcash ecosystem, then we could consider taking a DAO-like approach. But for this stage, 2023, I think it's good where we are right now.
Yeah, I mean, when everything's working, that's kind of, you know, I guess a testament enough. One thing I definitely have noticed with kind of other DAO models is, first off, the anti-scammer protection is not actively there. You kind of have to trust the whole community to figure it out on their own, who's trustworthy and who isn't, from just like deliberate scams. And also the whole thing of where it becomes difficult to create a proposal, for example, and only be paid after it's delivered. There's been some issues I've noticed with some DAOs on both sides of that, where someone will say, I'm going to do all this awesome stuff, give me money. They get the money, and then they at least unsatisfactorily deliver or just run away with the money. Or the other side, where some people do a lot of hard work and say, under the expectation of being able to be paid for this, and then the DAO doesn't want to pay them for that, and then they get mm-hmm. upset. Whereas this kind of a model where you can get something approved, have people watch it and pay them, but also only pay them when they actually deliver. And yeah, it's a lot more of a controlled model, which has, you know, those kinds of benefits. What do you think of the idea of, I've seen this kind of addressed elsewhere, where obviously you have to KYC in order to receive a grant, but like someone who receives a grant, obviously doing the KYC then, but then doing a kind of anonymous free for all, like smaller community project thing out of that. What do you think of that idea generally?
I think that's totally fine. And I believe it is encouraged. We just didn't find those parties who are ready to become the, owners of the fiduciary duty, having the fiduciary duty of releasing those funds. Mm-hmm. So I believe we have the first ever grant proposal being evaluated right now from ZecHub team. So ZecHub team has created their own internal DAO of like 10 people, and they plan to raise money from the DCG to pay their own DAO members and to release tips and Zec to certain other contributors. So this is great, actually. So this meets the criteria of KYCing the origin party who receives those funds. And then once they get the funds. It is up to them how they disperse it. And that protects the nonprofit from all the rightful accounting that they have to do. Sure. I mean, TechHub has owned its reputation by creating amazing content. If more parties need to come up, maybe they need to bring in some kind of the reputation that, hey, it's me. I've been in this community for so long. I'm ready to help the people on this forum or on Twitter, if you have a Twitter bot. So I'll make sure and I will give a detail of all the tech that I tip away, or I want to tip tech in Discord channels. So there are many ways to disperse this money. But again, there's another topic of the VCG fund. Why is it made for? It is made for funding major ongoing grants. So large teams who work on major work. Mm-hmm. But it so happened that there are so many other small things that need to be funded in the Zcash ecosystem that it's very necessary to keep the community alive.
Yeah, of course.
And, it did become an important part. And I believe there are conversations going forward. Maybe Zcash Foundation could take some of those small grants. Like there was one grant to edit the Wikipedia article of Zcash because it's too outdated. And then we got stuck in the loophole of, is it right? Is it legally allowed for organization who's connected to Zcash to pay someone to change its own information? That's a policy not allowed by Wikipedia. So there are some odd things that come up when you have this kind of controlled environment. But this would be applicable to any large cryptocurrency chain. It's not only Zcash. Ethereum Foundation cannot do it for their Ethereum funds. Solana, Avalanche, again, Algorand, they cannot. They are all susceptible to same rules, unless they try to relocate their headquarters, which some of them have done. Like both Ethereum and Solana have moved to Switzerland. Algorand has moved to Singapore, while Zcash Foundation is still a US-based nonprofit.
Yeah, that makes sense. This is probably a good time to jump into Nighthawk and what you guys do with that. So why don't you give a quick little overview of what Nighthawk, the apps, you kind of the development work you do, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. So as initially the idea was, the company name was Nighthawk Apps, and we gave that name to the wallet itself because I really love the feature set of Zcash and the idea of even shielded messaging and shielded money payments. So that really like gelled well with me and the other team members. Initially, I worked with, collaborated with Boston Zcash and my other team members in India, in Bangalore. So we forked the reference wallet of ECC and then started customizing it for real world end user use, customizations for simplifying workflows, language, etc. And then also applying for the grant, right, in 2021 to create a whole new user experience design. So since based on my past experience of working with, you know, multi-million dollar projects, design team was always a critical element to polish the application. So luckily we found a community member on Zcash forums who was based in Norway, Matt, and he helped us create an amazing workflow. And we did deliver on one of the clients on Android, that workflow. And iOS was still in the development. So it does happen, bad timing. You know, we had the big network upgrade 5 that went on 2022 mid, and then suddenly the spam attack started. So we can talk about that also later. But because of that, the wallet has not been performing well right now. Even we have been recommending to use our users to use Zec Wallet and other wallets, which have been along in the ecosystem for long, for quick access to funds. So it's been, I think, a big impact, a negative impact for end user usage, who are used to using their favorite apps and suddenly they cannot do anything with it. So we're in a bad place right now overall. But again, there are ideas that are in progress. Like I also started writing on the Zip, a new Zip for updating the transaction fees that will disallow the large spammy and like transactions to pay the same flat fees that we had set in the sapling era. So that's one update going on. And then of course the new synchronizing mechanism, the DAG sync, which is supposed to keep as much of the privacy preserving properties of transacting with Zec, working with Light Wallet servers. and to improve the overall experience for the end user. So my team makes and focuses on the wallet apps. Our team members also have built the Zcash BlockExplorer.com, a privacy-preserving block explorer, no cookies, no analytics of any kind, and even a Tor Onion link to access the site. I mean, we wanted this for ourselves, so we built it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the community members also liked it, and we get a lot of support from users. And yeah, I mean, that's all we care about for now. Shielded Money, we are all cryptocurrency users. We want the best way to privately use cryptocurrencies without being under surveillance. So that's being some kind of a starting point. And from there, we move on forward to see what we can actually deliver to the end users.
Yeah. And you guys are also involved with the Tor Chain project, right?
Yes. So we really pushed for getting the Tor Chain grant done, approved. And then, Tor Chain itself is such a complex setup, and it has undergone so many changes, chain halts, change in procedures of how you integrate the coin. Mm-hmm. And then there was some a huge delay, like a whole last year. Like, our original estimate was to deliver the integration by early last year, and then keep some time for the Tor Chain community to vote on the chain, and they have their own internal procedures to actually go live. But we realized the Golang implementation took a lot of time. Mm. And again, this is another side issue that Zcash has, that onboarding developers is a huge task, right? So even if you have a extremely skilled programmer with amazing knowledge of algorithms and data structures, they still have to understand how blockchains work, how Bitcoin works, how Zcash is different from Bitcoin, and then understand the cryptography level dependencies and libraries, and then build it out. So some developers are ready to contribute and available. If you don't get funding in the right time, those developers, they can get new projects and they leave. So we found some new developers, and some of them got burnt out. So it was a tough thing, but we are nearing the completion of milestone 3. I mean, it's still a long battle from here. After milestone 3, we have the wallet, Exchange.js wallet work to be done, which again doesn't have any Zcash based support. That needs the JavaScript implementation of all this cryptography, which is present for Litecoin and Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. But there has been no active development activity for Zcash. So we'll have to finish that portion and then rally the Torchain community again to get one of the first privacy coins on there. They have their own interests. There's a huge worry in that community whether even they should support privacy coins. Mm-hmm. That's another detail we can go in of how they could leverage the transparent ZEC for users to use Zcash and still get privacy when they withdraw their coins out.
Yeah, of course. And that's kind of been, I've sort of been very interested in the Tor Chain community since, you know, for almost 2 years now, right? And I've kind of been, you know, an advocate for them to expand their coin offerings in a lot of directions, for example, Zcash and Dash and other projects like that. And it's kind of, it's been very fascinating to see that, not to get too off tangent, right? But that aspect of the DeFi ecosystem kind of grow, where I do remember there's that big around Tornado Cash, that big privacy scare, and anything that was related to a privacy coin, a lot of people in the Tor Chain community were like, we can't do that, it'll, it was too early, it's going to destroy all our money, all this kind of stuff. And then they held the nodes to a vote, and it turns out like the actual money behind the project was very much in favor of privacy. Mm-hmm. However, there's still other discussions about, first off, which does Tor Chain have to add every single coin out there or not? And then there's hopefully very soon a Tor Chain fork called the Maya protocol, which is going to be a very slightly tweaked version of Tor Chain that will support some of the same, but also many different assets. And then there's also talk about something called like the Black protocol or something, which is supposed to be another Tor Chain fork, but dedicated towards privacy assets, like just add all those first. And so the whole, it used to be as simple as, you know, conceptually as let's try to get on Tor Chain. And now it's like, well, let's try to be part of this ecosystem somehow. Who knows where it's gonna land? But hopefully, I hear that front ends will be able to aggregate all the chains together, and addition to one will kind of add a certain amount of functionality to where you'll be able to swap between just about anything and kind of have a lot of the same features. But the good thing from, I guess, a development perspective is, at least from what I've heard, Maya is a very similar extremely similar to ThorChain. So a lot of the work that has already been done by, you know, teams like Nighthawk can be easily tweaked and transferred. Hopefully, you know, if there's other forks as well, that'd be kind of the same thing. And it's not like put all this time and money and work into ThorChain and then that doesn't end up panning out and it's all for nothing. You know, it seems like there is a lot of, you know, ability and momentum to get into the ecosystem as a whole.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, all the work we are doing, it'll still be useful in the future of Zcash. Like, there'd be no implementation in Golang for all the cryptography libraries. Mm-hmm. And then also ThorChain being a Cosmos-based ecosystem, and then I believe Zcash has plans to evaluate moving to a proof-of-stake system built on Cosmos. So I'm sure this work will be useful somehow. But speaking of ThorChain itself, if they plan to have different networks like Maya and another black network for privacy coins, I mean, my overall interest was to get into Rune and make sure the maximum value is delivered to the Rune holders, because that is the currency used for collateral lending and all sorts of things. So I still think ThorChain, like, the developers are super experienced. They're the smartest. They know they're the only ones developing L1 swaps, right? And the new lending features. But the community is still young, I believe. They maybe, you know, like they showed last year, they were too much in a hurry to launch the UST support with the Luna.
Yeah.
That was too early to take a bet on that. But they went with where they saw there was too much interest. So maybe they'll realize over time that maybe they don't need to support all the chains where there's hype. Maybe they need to support the chains which have actual utility. So if they do decide that there'll be Zcash in some other protocol like Maya network or Black network, I'll be having all my collateral locked over there then. I'll not have room.
Of course. Yes. Yeah, and I think a lot of people have sort of had the same thing. It's interesting to see, you know, collaborations between communities and sometimes, you know, the synergies that can kind of develop. I mean, I do think that also while flashy new sexy projects will never not be a consideration, they will always be there. I do think the space, maybe I'm too young and optimistic here, but I think that the space is starting to mature a little bit. And you know, especially after these epic crashes of this last couple of years of all like the centralized actors have just been caught from all the games they've been playing for years before, this is the cycle they all started to come down. And so maybe we'll see a more sober, humble kind of utility driven ecosystem coming into the next bull market in a couple of years. That's my hope. And so
that would be great if that happens.
That fits very well with Zcash as well. But so like, speaking of like actual utility and stuff, one of the things that Zcash has had a leg up on, right, is about an advantage over a lot of, I wouldn't say new project, because Zcash isn't exactly super new, but not like the very top three and then not just like brand new ones kind of thing, has been the ability to spend it in a lot of places via a service called Flexa. And I'm kind of not as familiar with Flexa as I probably should be. I do have the Spedin app, and I will, of course, test it out at some point. But I, you know, heard Nighthawk was integrating with Flexa and stuff. So do you mind just saying a quick little thing about, like, what is Flexa, how does it work, and what is its position in the Zcash ecosystem?
Sure. So I'll do my best to give limited information because I have with my company contracts with the Flexa. Do not disclose the information because we are in active development of their offerings. But overall, Flexa is a ecosystem. It's a POS solution, that is a point of sale integration. Just like there are gift card providers across the US, there are gift card aggregating companies which allow anyone to create a gift card. Like if you have a shop, if you have a chain of shops, there are companies who will help you print physical gift cards, even virtual gift cards to give to your customers. So there's existing network across the world, actually, almost in every major economy. But the US is the most active. And this comes from my experience working at Panera Bread and managing their gift card program from zero to lots of money, millions and billion dollars. So this is a big industry, active users who know how to use gift cards. And many of them have experience using the gift cards on their respective mobile apps. So Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks, they all have their mobile apps and gift cards. You can load your money and spend it. So this makes it very easy for end customers to switch from using the individual brand's apps, which might eat up a lot of space on your phone, versus this one single app, and you store your cash in that app. If you don't want the volatility of cryptocurrencies, you could just use a stable coin like USDC in the Spedden app of Flexa. That is one reference application they have built and operated from a couple of years. And a lot of chains across the US and Canada support Flexa. So Baskin Robbins, GameStop, several of those. So all you have to do is go to the store, have some cryptocurrency on your phone, and then at the time of the payment, just generate an on-demand gift card, which is made possible with all the point-of-sale ecosystem integrations in the backend, and then you can scan your QR code at the payment, and you just paid with your cryptocurrency. But on the backend, the collateral is the AMP token. So the trades are settled using AMP token from USD to cryptocurrency, and portion of the transaction fees that is earned is given back to the people who are staking AMP. So that way, it makes an incentive to hold the collateral also. There's a set number of AMP that will be. Right now, it's still in the emission curve. And there are details available on their Flexa Network website. So this is the ecosystem they have built up, a very small and determined team. And they want to deliver. They want to expand to even more countries. We hear their talks and patent filings. The progress there also has been very slow. Unfortunately, their integrations have not been delivered yet to their clients. And there are a couple of wallets which have signed up with Flexa to integrate the Flexa spending within the wallet, which makes it even more interesting because this way you don't have to lock up your coins in the Spedden app, because right now you need some coins in the Spedden app. Instead, you could use a regular cryptocurrency wallet, and at the time of the payment, you could make the send transaction, which happens in just one scan. So I don't know if you've used the Bitcoin.com wallet. I mean, that was the best innovation I've seen in cryptocurrency mobile wallets in the last many, many years, is if you have a QR code for making a payment, and if you pre-approve auto spending of $100 worth of goods, you just scan the QR code and the payment is just sent. So that way, I really liked how the wallet worked and handled payments at the cryptocurrency use cases. So Flexa just enables it at real USD-based retailers. I mean, we're still in a world where many retailers prefer holding USD. So this is something they could integrate with. But again, they're limited to large chains now. We don't have this functionality for like retail mom and pop stores. Maybe the mom and pop stores directly go for cryptocurrency acceptance. That's something we build for.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed there's kind of a, it splits like the ends of the bell curve, right? Where you have very large chains, then they tend very large like chain establishments. They usually have some sort of an automated like gift card program, and there's quite a few different things. Whether it's like I've noticed a lot of the same brands that are on Flexa are also on Bitrefill, or also on like Ionia's, like with this integrating the Edge wallet and other things like that. And so at that end, it's very easy to spend. And then on the other tail end, you have a small shop where you often see the owner or the manager there and can talk to them. And I remember there was I remember the local coffee shop not too far from me, Zuko came in and was setting up all the wait staff with Zcash wallets and tipping them and stuff. And then there's a brewery not too far from me that does take Zcash directly and holds the Zcash. And then there was another restaurant that also took Zcash and a few other cryptos, and then they unfortunately ended up closing down because they left, the owner left the state. But at the very small levels of the bell curve, like the largest and then the smallest, are opportunity areas. It's just the stuff in the middle where they're, you know, a large busy restaurant, but maybe there's only one of them. They're not a chain, or they're just a two or three locations. That's the hardest one for in personal, you know, experience to onboard. But yeah, there's a, it's kind of interesting to see. And at the very smaller levels, it's much more owner driven, where the owner wants the crypto, where the owner wants to hold Zcash and do that kind of stuff. Whereas at the larger levels, it's just the gift card rail integrations.
Exactly. And I mean, that has always been the best way to accumulate crypto as a business owner, is to start demanding payments in your favorite cryptocurrency, right? From the early days, you could just open up all cryptocurrency acceptance and wish that most of your customers start paying you in crypto. I mean, even at the time when bull markets are going on, I've seen the merchant adoption actually picks up. So they don't care about losing their purchasing value. I mean, they see this accumulation of crypto just as a long-term investment, because they do understand this is a scarce commodity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Let's hit on the roadmap. Can't quite see the entire thing because of the way this thing is displayed here. But basically, first half of 2023, Tag, Sync, and Zip 317 deployment via Zcash D and Zbrad, ZSA specification review, ZEC to Thorchain PR review. So that's the first half of 2023, right? Do you want to walk us through the rest of kind of, you know, the rest of having a roadmap out to 2025 is pretty nice, especially in the crypto world where they're just like coming this year, and that's kind of this is as far as they want to go.
Yeah, we try to keep it super high level, knowing what different participants in the Zcash ecosystem are building. I mean, again, things can get delayed. We have had so many other issues like talent leaving.
Mm-hmm.
If someone leaves your development ecosystem and you want to, again, onboard someone new, it takes more time, right? So with the best hope, the expectation is that we'll have like a good understanding of how ZSAs are supposed to work in Zcash by the mid half of this year. And maybe we can also submit our Thorchain remaining PRs and get into working with the Thorchain community. And of course, the Zcash D and Zebra D development continues to for optimized optimizations and various improvements they are delivering. So we have the Zcon 4, which is the yearly Zcash conference organized by Zcash Foundation. This year, it is planned to be in Barcelona. Last year was in Vegas. Last year was a success. I was there, and we had a bunch of interest and developments. It was the same time when the Torino Cash fiasco happened. So hopefully this year, nothing else happens during the conference, and we just have good news to deliver. So Zcon 4 happens. Once we have better understanding of the ZSAs, we can do a testnet launch, if possible. Mm-hmm. Like a side testnet could be like a second testnet beside the Zcash main testnet.
Yeah.
And security audits. So yeah, we want to get more security audits done in the ecosystem. We have the Taylor Hornby, who's the, he was in Zcash before Zcash was made. So he's definitely someone you want to maybe interview on your podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
He can help us with the audits. Then there's OMR, which is Oblivious Methods Retrieval. This is a long-term syncing strategy, which is instead of your client trying to get your transaction information from a light client server, you just send a one-time request with a small payment to a service that, hey, give me all my transactions and the latest information, and immediately you get a callback. Just like today's banking apps work, right? So you open your bank app, it makes API calls to the backend and gives you your information. Of course, the bank doesn't charge you money because they're making money some different way. But here, you might want to pay a small fee. And all of this will be done anonymously. So that's the beauty of OMR, which is the service will only know that you're requesting a bunch of transactions and you've paid the money for it. But the service will not know which transactions in the chain belong to you. but it can still give those encrypted transactions to you. So this is a research conducted by a Columbia University student, and Aaron Tromer was one of the founding scientists of Zcash. Something to look forward for in the future. That hopefully will be a good end of this year if we can get a lot of progress delivered. Next year, the plan is, as we have much more changes coming up, if CSAs get finalized in some form, we'll have a network upgrade 6, because that's a major update, NU6 for Zcash network, usually a hard fork upgrade. Zcash, we have hard forks. And then we also kept that as a time frame for launching our revamped wallet experience. We have been very under-promising over here. We want to over-deliver, but it just gets so tough to do that in the cryptocurrency space, because there's always something that comes up. We need to take care of it. So we have given a nice timeline for it. And then there's new discussions that the Kerit team, the team who's building ZSAs, they had shared in one of the Arborist calls that they want to build ZSA atomic swaps. So you could have on-chain swaps between ZEC and some shielded assets without any third party. And two parties can interact directly with each other on-chain.
That'd be nice.
Then there's work for cross-chain swaps. That's even more futuristic, but it's been under discussion for many years, which is we use a signature signing scheme that's similar on two networks like Ethereum and Zcash. So for example, you could move some of your Ethereum assets, tokens like USDC, for example, on ETH. You could lock it onto a smart contract. And once that is verified on Zcash, there could be a program that looks at both the chains, just like ThorChain looks at all the different chains connects to swaps. So this program could verify the asset is locked and then release some shielded USDC on the ZSA and Zcash chain. So this is something that's possible, which needs more research and implementation. So hopefully Kerit can look into it in the coming future.
Yeah, I mean, that in particular, if the UX ends up being smooth enough, then that could be a kind of a situation where a lot of different cryptocurrencies can stop competing so hard on privacy, because when you want more privacy, you just mint a Zcash version of that and then transact that and go back, just kind of going back and forth in that way. And that if implemented correctly, that could kind of be a huge thing, because a lot of the world, I guess, Zcash kind of is the top of the heap as far as privacy is concerned. And the reason why people use other assets is because of kind of other things, like not enough liquidity or integration things or whatever. There's a bunch of other factors, but this would kind of allow everyone to use Zcash without necessarily, you know, just as easily with their own assets. So that's kind of something I'm definitely watching with interest.
Absolutely. Like, the end user expectation should be so seamless. There are ideas floated around in such a way that you should be able to send any asset from any chain to any chain. I mean, that'll be true interoperability way in the future, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then that's kind of the first half of 2024. And then you got ZCon 5 and the halving, proof of stake, governance, and the Zcash Prosperity Development Fund updates. That's a lot of stuff going up in the end of next year.
Right. Hoping there's another Zcash conference again next year. Hopefully Zcash Foundation keeps organizing those amazing events. We have the second halving coming up, November 2024. Mm-hmm. And there will be discussions as to what the community would like to change in the third phase of the blockchain issuance, right? The Zcash issuance period. And everything from a new dev fund, so we would have enough experience learning from the 4 years of funding mechanism we had in place. And we would have a new way suggested. Again, the Zcash members would vote what to allow in the ecosystem at the protocol level. And then proof of stake again, there are some ideas. There is nothing solidified and things that are released yet. There's a big study that is released, but it's not very in-depth on what approach they would like to take as to, like, I want to see some sample code, some testnet ideas, and then go from there. So hopefully by the end of next year, we get more clarity on that. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be fun. And then 2025. So my running prediction is 2025 is like kind of like starting to become the peak of the next bull market, and it might be an early majority adoption phase for crypto, where we kind of got close this last cycle, but still I think it might be to where you start seeing regular people who are not part of your own little crypto nerd cult just paying in crypto like at a random business and stuff. You'll actually see this show up in the wild. It's not mass adoption yet, but it's like, it's kind of like when the first iPhones came out, you saw some people having them, but it's not a lot of them. So that's a lot, like, that's a great milestone, like, get everything done before then, you know?
Hopefully. I mean, we can really achieve all of this way faster also if we can onboard a bunch of smart technical developers focused on delivering all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the pace of the development, the issues that have come up, the market price of the coin being still near the mining price of ZEC. I mean, in the end, the crypto, the price of the coin is the best marketing, like they say. Mm-hmm. So we don't have that flexibility to just fund and spend a lot of money. Like comparing this to the Ethereum fund, I remember by the 2017 bull run, they had amassed like $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good chunk of money. And they did the smart thing by hedging it, and they cashed out. I mean, mm-hmm. they created a total of, you know, $1,000 plus, so they had an average sale price, and then Ethereum came all the way back down below $100. Doesn't matter. They had the cash. They could keep funding the development through the bear of 2018 to 2020. That propelled Ethereum development like nothing else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We did not have that. I mean, we did not do that. We have the ZCG funding. Mm-hmm. It has around $6 or $7 million. It is a good chunk. It can be used pretty well if deployed to projects which have the right product market fit.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to find a way to educate and onboard developers specifically for the Zcash related cryptography, convince them that the future here. I mean, every cryptocurrency out there had the same challenge, right? They want to attract the best talent focused on their chain. So it is a challenge, definitely.
Yeah. So that's a pretty, you know, fun and ambitious roadmap for the future. Let's talk a little bit about the mobile privacy discussion. So, well, first off, as I mentioned, you know, I believe in the last podcast on this, I remember in the early days, there's a lot of like misinformation about crypto in general. And I do remember in like the early days, like 2017, 2018, like around there, I remember people going around with Zcash in like their multi-coin wallet, and some of them not even knowing that it was all transparent, like just, oh, it's Zcash, it's private, it's what it does, and kind of not knowing. And then I remember, of course, the challenge of integrating privacy-preserving functionality as a whole into light clients, because you know, you have to usually have to communicate with a node, a full node. And how do you communicate if you're trying to preserve the privacy of the data you're communicating and just having like an issue? And I do remember when Zcash, I forget which upgrade it was, but that kind of made a lot of this more feasible. And speaking to a friend, he was saying like, oh, we got like privacy on mobile, that's, you don't have to trust the node operator. And I was like, wow. I was like, it wasn't that I didn't believe it at first, but I was like, I just want to make sure I heard that right and like go through that. So what are some of the particular challenges with trying to get next level privacy on mobile, and how have they been sort of surmounted so far?
Yeah, that's the overall issues which a lot of people have in cryptocurrencies, right? Like you touched on, which is, mm-hmm. realize these transactions are, they look anonymous, but they're all connected, and it's the permanent database of surveillance for anyone to like track you and check things on you. So I had my own fun experience early in the day when I sent some bitcoins to my brother, and then he suddenly told me, you know, how many bitcoins I have. I'm like, how did you do that? And then he explained to me how everything is public out there. I'm like, oh my goodness. Okay. So what are the alternatives here? So then Bitcoin Cash at the time was evolving into Coin Shuffle. And then there was a Cash Fusion, Cash Shuffle and Cash Fusion. But they each had their issues. They're trying to achieve privacy in transit. And you need to be careful with the change that comes in. You need to donate the change back to the developers of the protocol.
Yeah, the toxic change problem.
Yeah, and I still found my addresses being attacked by the Chainalysis, like 200 sats chain spam. Anytime I was to move my coins, then again comes the spam. And that's when I truly try to find a solution, which is landed on Zcash, other technology, where you can have a secret address and it doesn't matter who sends you what. As long as you keep using your address as a store of value, and then there are ways to use Zcash to maintain the privacy, right? So first, when the mobile clients got out, again, the beauty of Zcash is you just need one address. You don't have to worry about managing multiple addresses. If one address could have all your money coming in and managing. You also have support of a viewing key if you want to view all your transactions and itemize them for any accounting or tax purposes and such. As for the light clients syncing mechanisms, the simplest one was the linear scanning algorithm, which the Nighthawk wallet also relies on based on the mobile SDKs by ICC. What that does is it downloads all the headers, the light blocks from the light client server, and then manually on the phone scans each of the blocks to see if transactions and notes belong to your address, exist on it. So that's like pure privacy. It's like almost running a light version of a node.
Yeah,
as long as you trust the light wallet server giving you the right light blocks, I mean, not incorrect and bad data. And there are some protections in place. You could verify what chain the light wallet service is running on. And if there's a chain fork, it happens sometimes, you know, every other day, there are forks in every chain that happen. In Zcash, when it is detected, the light wallet server rolls back 100 blocks and then requires your light clients to scan again. So it's a pretty tedious and slow process, but it guarantees you such privacy, which you will not see in other cryptocurrencies. So it is a pretty solid tool, especially when you're not, today we don't have that many places to spend your ZEC, right? So most users, as far as we have studied based on our feedback and UX studies, people buy ZEC from exchanges and they withdraw it to the Nighthawk wallet as a store of value. They save it there and they don't plan to spend it anytime soon. So that turned out to be a good user experience, which many users had and enjoyed. But soon as we hit a lot of transactions happening in every block and the block spam starting from NuFi onwards, because Orchard transactions, they allowed sub-actions within each transaction. So you could have thousands of actions sending and receiving ZEC within one transaction. Because I think it was the biggest miss in Zcash in the recent history, which is not preparing the fee model for the Orchard release. So we started the same sampling, 1,000 ZAT Satoshi's fee, which is a privacy-preserving mechanism. You have the same fee for all shielded transactions. But here, the thousands of actions turned out to mean that each transaction became almost like as heavy as 2 megabytes. And compare that, one Bitcoin block is just 1 point something megabytes, you know, 1.0.4. So imagine one transaction is 2 megabytes, and this spammer, you can call, maybe it's a legitimate use case, I don't know. I put a very small chance on someone truly trying to find limits of Zcash and NU5 Halo 2 feature set by testing this out. But they're leaving a mark, you know, it's a permanent footprint they have left on the Zcash blockchain, because we blew up from 25 gigs to almost 200 gigs now within 8 months. So it's been a big user experience, like miss and issues we have faced, but some light wallets took an approach of filtering all the last transactions. Like, hey, if you detect a last transaction, ignore it, don't download it. And only request transactions which belong to your wallet. So that leaks some privacy information to the light wallet server. If you believe the light wallet server has been logging, so the services we run as a Nighthawks team, We do not have any logging. We even sign a warrant canary, and are we going to move user transparency request and such. So there are privacy trade-offs there. There are spam issues going on. Once we have the new fee mechanism added, the spammer or the person making the large transactions will have to pay a lot of ZEC to make those 1,000 actions in every transaction. So hopefully we'll not see those large transactions. And if we still see it, that the person is paying like more than 0.1 ZEC every time they want to transact, that means there is some demand. And if there is demand, then we need to, again, update the fee mechanism as per necessary.
Yeah. So that's kind of, there's a lot of things kind of to unpack in that whole thing. The first thing is something that I think a lot of people don't really realize right away is when you're trying to maintain privacy, it's not just you flip on a switch. There's a lot of nuance to how you achieve that. And so the most obvious answer, which is the wrong answer, but the obvious one is just charge a fee based on data. So if you have a larger transaction, you just pay more. The problem is, as you pointed out, then you start to be able to have those stand out from the rest of the transactions. It's like, well, this is a specific kind, and then that starts harming privacy over time. So that becomes kind of more difficult to do. And it's kind of like it's not like a basic scaling exploit. It's just a very specific use case kind of exploit to just kind of do that. As far as like the legitimate use case type thing, I find that personally just, limited knowledge of the situation, but I personally find that to be very unlikely that someone would have found something super, interesting and would only do some kind of a thing on that has a very specific negative outcome, kind of for the chain. And as you said, of course, when there's a fee kind of change, that will kind of prove whether it was a legitimate use case or whether it was, I guess, either a bad actor or someone, or, I guess like a white hat, as it were, trying to stress the chain in ways to make sure it gets future proof, to make sure it gets fixed. So if something like this happens in an actual malicious way, when the chain is bigger and there's more users, then it's addressed. So you mentioned the fee upcoming fee change to address that. So what exactly is planned as far as the change in the fee, and how will that kind of mitigate the problem, or how will that possibly mitigate the problem?
Right. So one of the primary changes, we are going back to paying 10,000 Satoshis fee as a standard fee.
Mm-hmm.
Because as for the ZIP 313, which also I had worked on, we reduced the fee from 10,000 to 1,000 ZATs
mm-hmm.
at a time when we were encouraging novel applications of ZEC. We had marketplaces like ZBay and other shielded messaging ideas where we realized that sending 10,000 ZATs as a minimum fee every time you're sending just a shielded message with the minimum one ZAT transaction, maybe that's just too much. So let's reduce it to 1,000, and it's not making any difference. Because there's no use, that much demand for the ZEC block space. So that went well for a while till we ran into the Orchard actions issue where, for example, 1,000 actions are happening in an Orchard transaction when a block and a transaction is loaded up, and the attacker is only paying 1,000 ZATs standard fee right now, right? So the new formula is going to be 10,000, and you have to pay 10,000 for each action.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly you're paying 10,000 times 1,000. So that's 100,000, 1 million, 10 million. So that's 10 million equals 0.1 ZEC per transaction. So that is supposed to help for Orchard. And the idea there is regular users use Zcash just to send single payments. Maybe they'll send two or three users at one time. So the regular vast variety of transactions will be one input and two outputs with 10,000 Satoshis fee.
Mm-hmm.
In the Sprout, in the Sapling, in the Orchard as well. I believe the change is also requested for the transparent transaction. So here we are unifying for the first time, including even transparent transaction revamp. Because earlier we had not changed the transaction piece for transparent large transactions happening. So that is why this change is a big one, and it's taking time to implement, because we need to negotiate with all the ecosystem partners, exchanges, some customized use cases. There are some hardware wallet makers and payment card providers which have the old code of Bitcoin fee calculation hard-coded in their wallet software. So all of that has to be coordinated. ECC is doing the primary legwork there.
Yeah.
So overall, again, for the end user, they will not see much difference apart from fees going up from 1,000 satoshis per transaction to 10,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's still not that much. You know what that is in like USD right now?
It's less than one cent, actually, still.
Yeah, which is pretty reasonable. And honestly, a lot of cryptocurrencies today have far below 1 cent fees. And a lot of that is just due to lack of, you know, activity, lack of demand. I do think that, you know, I mean, obviously I'm not an expert, but I do think that with high, you know, workload on a lot of these networks, we will still be able to have cheap transactions, but they won't necessarily be a millionth of a cent or something. They might be like one or several cents, and that's it. And so if there's people right now that are complaining about using Zcash because they have to pay almost a cent, I mean, I don't really see that as a legitimate issue. It's only for, you know, again, spammers and people like that.
Exactly. And if there are use cases like messaging and such coming up, then it might be a time to start looking into a layer two solution. I mean, I'm personally never a fan of layer twos, like ever since the Lightning announcement in 2015. Mm-hmm. It was a good announcement at the time. I believe the ideal use case was companies like Amazon, for example, when they accept Bitcoin. That time the idea was that maybe they don't want all their internal transactions, especially if they have Amazon issued gift card, to be on chain on L1. Maybe for that, they use the L2 for internally settling their bills. And then once a day or once a week or once an hour, write that to the main chain. That was the understanding that I had. But again, the whole BTC pushed it in a narrative that all the transactions should be on Lightning Network, and only few high net worth transactions, banks and federal level, you know, federal banks should be using the main chain. That's the for them. But I see L2s as utility, just like how Ethereum network has, you know, so many L2s prosper into different utility chains. Maybe the utility chains don't hold that much value compared to the main chain, because they are based on specific utility, like maybe shielded messaging on a Zcash L2. But then if you're sending big amounts of money, that happens on L1. So there are different options out here to explore and to work on.
Yeah. That's for sure. And it kind of goes to the whole, like, what is the purpose of the blockchain? What primarily is the point for Zcash? And obviously payments is in, you know, sound money and then payments, like, which has a certain value parameter and a certain frequency. Like in my personal life, there are quite a few days actually where I don't actually make a purchase. It's not an everyday thing. Sometimes I don't buy anything. Sometimes I go and make dozens of purchases in a single day. And so that's not a ton of activity. And also, if you're going to post a permanent record somewhere, like, at this day, I declare that I promise to follow, something like that, that's something that's also a very permanent record. But for example, like all of our communications today, I can't think of a single one that necessarily needs to stay for all of eternity. Like, a lot of those could be, you know, back and forth in a second layer, and then maybe the entirety of the conversation gets batched into, you know, like a updatable record on chain at some point. But like, each little one doesn't have to be its own separate communication. And so, especially if you're hitting a bunch of likes on social media and each like sends a little bit of money, that doesn't need to be like a whole payment. Can you imagine if you were using Twitter and every single time you liked or retweeted, you took your like credit card, like that would be ridiculous. Like, no one would do that.
You have the experiment, right? The BCH-based book. I think it was the BCH memo.
Yes, I still use Venmo on a daily basis.
No, not cash. You have to pay some small amounts. I mean, this is also not something unique to cryptocurrency world. I mean, we could also keep track of what the large company, the FANG, are doing, right? They store so much petabytes and petabytes of data. What are their plans in the long term? Are they going to continue giving us almost free access? I mean, of course, they are making money through ads and such. But if the cost of storing that data becomes way too much, maybe they too will batch that data and lock it up for long term and then charge people or maybe watch more ads to access your old data, right? Yeah. So we could learn from those approaches. I mean, there's so much we could learn from Web2. We just don't have that going on, that active use case going on in Web3 and our cryptocurrencies today to match that level of engineering.
Yeah, of course. The underlying infrastructure is still being built, and it's kind of like several steps before that. So one question I did get, I decided to do this one like word for word, like of all these kinds of points. It's kind of funny because the spam attack situation has been, depending on who you ask, there's a wide variety of opinions on it, right? As in some from complete dismissal, like not complete, but like mostly dismissal, like, well, everything's pretty much working except for a couple things, to, you know, some people thinking it's the end of the world. So just read this one off here. So it's hard not to conclude that there's been a startling lack of urgency on the part of core developers to resolve the spam and thus Light Wallet syncing issue, which will have taken almost a year to resolve as is now projected. If issues that greatly affect the usability of Zcash arise in the future, how can we have confidence they'll be handled with the priority they deserve? So what's your take on that perspective?
I mean, it's a serious question, you know, by any solid long-term holder and investor of Zcash. Mm-hmm. Coming from end user standpoint, they're seeing dissatisfaction. They're seeing some wallets not working, and they need to dig in and see what the problem is. You know, I cannot speak much about other entities based on what I know I can speak, which is ECC, the maintainers of Zcash-T. They have a limited team they're working with, right? As far as I know, there are less than 10 core devs, maybe even less than 10, I don't know.
Yeah.
So again, it goes back to attracting talent to contribute and work on Zcash. According to their work, they have delivered, you know, what they promised. Even though it was a year late, of course, they had extra audits and a great launch to NU5, which is a huge undertaking. Everyone in the cryptocurrency space who are actually working on cryptography respect that release. Page long implementation detail manual. So their work is done as to really release the protocol level, have the network working, support the ecosystem partners to have the exchanges supporting Zcash transactions working, both the shielded and transparent transactions, right? And from their angle, they expect rest of the ecosystem or other third-party community members to be working on wallets. Right? Maybe Zcash Foundation could do it. Maybe someone else could do it. Why should everyone assume only ECC should do it from their perspective, you know? But from the outside perspective, like, hey, you guys are building everything. Why don't you think of this or that? It sucks because from my perspective and my teams, there's also expectation that, hey, why is your wallet not working? So we were in a way focused on the experience and the end user usability perspective, right? We were not developing the SDK. We did not hire any team members for that. The Rust Lang based talent. I mean, first of all, it's difficult to find Rust Lang developers and them to understand the cryptography and then to innovate on top of that, right? So there's a lot of expectation over here from a small group of developers. And if the question is how to avoid this in the future, is hey, you guys are all connected. You have so much Zec. Why don't you recommend your refer Zcash development to your best engineer that you come across, you know, wherever you go to meetups, go to company events, try to convince them that, hey, this is a project that needs help and you could come and make a huge difference, huge impact. There are users around the world. I mean, we think they're only users who go on the forum or the crypto Twitter. No, there's in the real world, I've come across people who are not really online, but they have Zcash. They call it their Armageddon coin, you know, whatever it is. So
yeah,
there's a gap here that needs to be filled, and every cryptocurrency has that challenge. I mean, Zcash, there are more expectations because you're going into the privacy route and offering the best privacy. So that is one area we need help.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. It's kind of one of those, it's one of those things that, like, when I'm talking about, you know, I believe that cryptocurrency adoptions, you know, adoption is going to be taking off pretty soon. It's just because of a lot of different signs you see. Like, you see a lot of things being built. You see a lot of background integrations with big companies and things like that. You see a lot of things like that going on. But one of the biggest things is there is so much demand for senior, especially senior, but like cryptocurrency developers. There's an insane amount of demand. And every time I talk to someone about, hey, what if this project did that thing? What if we built this here? Everyone's like, yeah, good luck finding someone. And it's just like, well, if we paid them like, you know, $500,000 a year, we might be able to get someone. But if we can't do that, then just like, good luck. And it's like, it's not just, are there developers who, like, there are developers out there and there are developers who want to work on crypto, but those two plus all the requisite skill sets seems to be extremely limited to where it's like, who understands like blockchain consensus at a root level, who can program in these few languages, who understands this, who, like, all this collection of skills together is very limited and in very high demand. Though it's not like, oh, it's not like, well, we can't pay you to work on our project. There's a lot of projects that can pay. They just can't find anyone because those people are already, you know, doing something else. And so, yeah, that next generation of blockchain native developers kind of needs to come out. And once that happens, I really think we're going to see an explosion in the space. I mean, probably the early, like, because I'm kind of more consumer focused, right? The early majority, you know, of people trying to use this stuff at like use as end users might not even be the biggest wave we see. Hopefully in the next few years, we see this wave of, you know, reinforcements for the development community because there's so much that needs to be done.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, on the same day today, Google has laid off 12,000 developers and employees, and Amazon and Facebook and all of them have announced so many layoffs. Definitely some of them could start looking for jobs in the cryptocurrency space. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've noticed many of them try to take the safe path. In a way, they join a project that is kind of replicating what some project has already achieved. Like many of these L2 coins on Ethereum, they keep launching another L2 network with their own issuance of coins, and they could literally mint millionaires in a couple of weeks, right? So that is where the money and the interest is going. That's where the incentives are, unfortunately. So going through all of that and still attracting and maintaining the talent within Zcash, it's a huge challenge, as I've said before. So again, it's the hope that we find people who align with the mission of Zcash and who look for the long-term stability and development of the protocol. I mean, Zcash has been around since 2016. It's going to keep building up and growing. It has the world's most distributed anonymity set of shielded transactions. Like any third-party project who wants to develop something with zero knowledge proofs, they could use the anonymity set of Zcash to build strong applications in their regions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Now, kind of on the other side of the coin, pardon the pun, is the what if... in terms of this like spam attack kind of thing, kind of wrap up on that thing, it seems to be it affects a very certain subset of users, but at the same time that's kind of viewed as possibly the most important subset of users. What if it isn't moving forward? What if the mobile kind of like everyday money kind of stuff tends to kind of go to other chains, for example, that don't necessarily have these stringent privacy requirements and don't have the same kind of issues, and then Zcash is the kind of, you know, secret nerd money that you have on your desktop computer at home that you use to buy your secret things, or like as you said, like Armageddon money. What if it's Armageddon money but not, you know, coffee money? Do you think that that's a possibility?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, in the end, if you consider the Bitcoin's original narrative, which is you want to just hold Bitcoin as an asset, never get rid of it, never give it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You just accumulate more. So if that's the philosophy that Zcash holders adopt as we reach lowering issuance, then less ZEC, ZEC becomes less liquid, and you maybe have ZSAs now. So if the ZSAs are well hardened and tested, people and economies can issue ZSA assets, which maybe somewhat be backed by ZEC lockups of some kind, or maybe interchangeable with ZEC if needed. And that gives value to those ZSAs. So maybe people just use ZSAs, maybe on Zcash L2, layer 2s, and ZEC the asset becomes just to hold. I mean, we are so early now that we can actually use ZEC as an asset. But again, user expectation is, you know, there are polished wallets and applications available for every cryptocurrency. My core interest was that, hey, where is the crypto, the wallet for my favorite coin, for Zcash?
Yeah, of course.
That's on the Nighthawk wallet. So our team will try to build this as long as possible with support for ZSAs and such innovations. But who knows whether long-term usage will take us. I mean, the protocol will continue being hardened. We still have the Zcash D, which is based on a fork of the Bitcoin D, Bitcoin fork code base, right? And we now have the Zebra D client, which is a Rustlang implementation of the Zcash node and the mining chain. So maybe we totally move to a Rustlang-based, hardened, more resilient node software. And the use cases also change with that. I mean, that node will just be useful to, for safely locking up ZEC as we move to proof of stake. And that locked ZEC will give you staking interest at further issuance while you help power VSA is being transacted on the Zcash network. I mean, in a way, it's a copy of what Ethereum is doing right now, but in a much better and a privacy preserving way, if I could put it that way.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. What are you most particularly excited about in the future of Zcash? What's the, if there's one thing you could look forward to, that's, you know, not there yet, but will be hopefully in the future, what would be your favorite thing in the future?
Favorite thing in the future? I mean, apart from everything we talked about, like Flex, ThoughtChain, with the NIM networks, privacy preserving architecture, I think thing for me is more like adoption. Like we want to see real world users actually start caring about this asset as money. Because people on the street, they were of course super like excited with the bull market of the last 2 years, right? And now that the coin prices have come back down, many of them actually lost trust, not because of just price coming down, but most of them did not hold self-custody of their coins. They stored it within Voyager, BlockFi, Celsius, FTX, everything you can name that went down, you know. Like there were people, some of us were screaming like, hey, not your coin, not your keys, not your coins. It might all crash. And then there were the response like, how can it crash? There's multi-billion dollar VC money backing all of this. So it's just sad that it did really crash. Like even this morning, finally Genesis, the one of the oldest custodians of cryptocurrencies, they also filed for bankruptcy. So it's just such a horrible marketing and thing to happen that my hope and what I want to see is the end users being educated and marketed to start believing in this alternative form of money, which is different from the state-issued fiat and CBDCs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the original mission that sort of, you know, drives us. It is kind of funny when I talk to crypto people, or it seems like there's all kinds of reasons people are into crypto. They're interested in the tech, or they're looking for more money, or they want to buy drugs, for example. I mean, that was a lot of the Silk Road days and stuff, or there's like a lot of different reasons, but it seems like the people building crypto have a lot of, like, the driving force moving the industry forward seems to be relatively united. Almost everyone believes in permissionless, trustless systems, almost everyone believes in privacy. Almost everyone who's building everything is, you know, into, you know, a free money for a free people and free technology for a free people. And it's, as long as that informs the movement moving forward, I really, which it seems to be, I think that we're going to have a bright future. You know, I think it's, I think we're going to get there, wherever there is. So do you have any final thoughts, and do you have anything to shell that you have not already shelled?
I mean, again, I might be talking a lot about Zcash only, but I'm also involved in the rest of the cryptocurrencies. I have a lot of proof of stake based coins, and I wish the success of every other project, which are trying to achieve a lot of things in the world, working with different institutions and going for adoption of every kind. So even though I'm pro Zec Maxi almost, I want to see and learn from other cryptocurrencies and how they're going about their adoption techniques, and then see how Zcash could work with them. Maybe they could adopt Zcash technology, and such ideas.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic. So where could people find you on, which always makes Zcash people like tighten up a little bit, like I'm being spied on. Like, where could people find you on like social media, et cetera?
So I'm mostly active on Twitter with my anagram of the name AIYADT. Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm used to going. And then I also have a Zcash forum account where we mostly go to discuss some Zcash related items.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, everyone go follow him. It's always good. It's always a pleasure. And thanks very much for being on. It's been a great chat. As you know, like we usually slot out like a good old 60 minutes for this, but then if it runs past that, I always give leeway for that. If it runs past that, that always means it was, you know, better than expected. So yeah, thanks very much for being on. Everyone, thanks for watching. And yeah, we will see you next month for another special guest on Zcash Podcast to be determined. But yeah, thanks everyone. Enjoy your week. Yes, enjoy your weekend, and yeah, have a good one.
Bye.